podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to Monday's edition of the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. I am your host, Tony Anderson, and I am fortunate to be joined by Mr. Craig Anderson.
Hi, Tony. How's it going?
Oh, wonderful, mate. Wonderful, mate. I'm excited to talk about this cup final with you after that long, arduous, but ultimately very fun Friday podcast we'd done last week for the cup final. And to join us to do that is Mr. Tom Watt. How are we doing, Tom?
Very good. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, anytime, Tom. This is you guys are seem to be the ones that I'm on with quite frequently now. So I feel we're getting chemistry going together, which is great. But someone who didn't have chemistry going was Livingston, in what will now be known as the Marvin Bartley left wing final, and that's not due to his political stance. Craig, I mean, we spoke about this on Friday, and I thought I was pretty chuffed to myself, I'll be honest, when the teams came out, because I thought I'd called it with Stephen Lawson starting, and I thought they were going to have him in that left midfield role, and quite a defensive, but in a defensive role, really, as they were worried about Sean Rooney. But then all things came to shock. I thought Michael Stewart was going to have an aneurysm, when it turned out that Marvin Bartley had been moved over to the left. Can you explain this to me, Craig Anderson?
I mean, not really. Like anything, you can understand a bit of logic, and you made the point of, you know, Rooney being so dangerous of late that maybe you need someone to kind of go up against him. Now, that's not something I subscribe to in general. I think if you want to stop a fullback from getting up the park, we'll put an attacking player against him and give him something to think about the other way. But you can understand the logic of doing it, and you can understand even, you know, maybe he thinks he can trust Bartley. Bartley's his captain, and he knows how to, you know, he's a defensively solid player, and he probably is happy to get involved in a bit of kind of, you know, a tussle and you know, getting winding people up and all that type of stuff, that maybe they thought they could get something. So I don't have necessarily an issue with them starting like that, but the fact that everyone watching the game could see it just wasn't working, culminating eventually in Rooney absolutely tearing him a new one down that side, maybe just short of the hour mark of the game. And yet it took him so long to change it. And, he had the personnel to be able to change that after 15 minutes without making a sub, because, as you say, Lawson, who was anonymous in the game, could have easily gone out there. It just feels like Bartley's a quite an important player in the middle of the park. And okay, they didn't lose the central midfield battle because there just really wasn't one, but they lost his influence in the middle of the park, and he wasn't very effective out on the left, which is probably not a surprise, because if he was going to be an effective left winger, we'd probably have discovered that by now at age of 34.
Tom, do you think there's? I mean, I was speaking off air during the game with you guys as well, and I was mentioning sort of the word arrogance, and I was just wondering, was that a bit unfair? I started to feel that there was a level of arrogance maybe about it. Firstly, that he just refused to change it despite it not working for so long. But I think there's no doubt that maybe he overthought it.
I definitely think he overthought it. I mean, I think that there must be a. There must be a temptation to do that in the build up to these games. I mean, you can definitely win a cup final because of some stroke of tactical genius, but more often than not, you can lose one. And if you've had weeks, you know, sitting in bed at night plotting the downfall of one particular team, you're bound to overthink it every now and again. And, you know, like Craig says, I don't think it's necessarily a ridiculous idea to identify Sean Rooney as the main attacking threat or one of the main attacking threats. But if you're up against Rangers, who have the best attacking threat from the right back position in the league, the natural thing to do is give him something to occupy him, but make sure you've got some, make sure that he's got to do his defensive duties. I mean, Sean Rooney as an attacking force has only really come to the fore in the last 6 weeks, 8 weeks. He's been an out and out defender for almost his entire career. The fact he's got this other side to his game is fantastic, but what you really want to be forcing Sean Rooney to be doing is actually having to defend. I think Martindale has had an awful lot of credit, rightly, in the last few months for the way that he's nipped and tucked his teams. He's made very little minor adjustments to the way that they've set up, which means that they are much, much harder to play against, and they impose their style on whoever they're playing on. Like, I am a huge fan of Sean Rooney, but he's not Dani Alves. Like, I mean, they're, and I don't necessarily think it's arrogance, and I don't necessarily think that it's a bad idea to focus specifically on him. But there are a lot of very good players in that St Johnstone team. And if you're going with such a lopsided formation, and you're effectively saying, like, we're not going to be able to attack down our left-hand side, we're not going to cause them problems down the left-hand side, you're really severely hamstrung with what you can do elsewhere. But it wasn't just that the theory was quite negative. It really didn't work. It didn't stop Rooney being dangerous. It didn't stop him driving forward and winning the corner. I mean, he said afterwards he really enjoyed the attention and the physical battle that he got from having someone matched up directly against him. It didn't stop him being dangerous. It didn't stop him winning the corner that ultimately he scored the winning goal from. It didn't stop him with a couple of driving runs. And it really took, for it to take 70 minutes for Martindale to make a change and realise that wasn't working, for all the credit that he's had, absolutely rightly, that was a fairly grievous mistake. And like you opened with, that will be one of the... That was really the defining discussion of the final.
Yeah, I mean, my idea the minute I saw it is that it didn't really make sense to me. I understand what Craig's saying with, obviously, the trust and Bartley being an experienced player, but I don't think Bartley would have fancied going up against such a powerful runner one-on-one for such a large period of the game due to his age, his style. It never actually made sense to me from the word go. And like I said, when Lawson's already there, who's played out in that position before, does have more legs than Bartley, is a sort of left back. If you're wanting to do this thing where you're going to play with two left backs to stop sort of a main danger man, then it was sort of staring him in the face. But I agree, maybe I don't want to be too harsh, because I mean, I was waxing lyrical about Martindale previously when he'd done the jet at wing back, which seemed ridiculous on the face of it, but then that worked an absolute treat, and he's used jet in sort of wide positions with Pittman. So I don't want to get too big, because it is just one decision. I just think he's maybe, as I say, just overthought it. But there was other decisions in the game. I mean, this is going to sound a lot like Martindale bashing. We will come on to talk about the successes of St Johnstone. But I was shocked when that even the substitutions he made, Craig, for example.
Yeah. Well, just the players he brought on, he didn't really change the shape, and the shape wasn't working. Or when he changed the shape, it was just like, oh, fling another striker on. And it felt like he didn't really ever address the problems that this team had, because they weren't creating. So why are you taking off the guys that might actually create something, even if they've not played well, in Mullen and Pittman? These guys are if you're talking about creating a goal out of somewhere, those are the players that we spoke about, we identified as maybe the ones that would do it. It made sense to bring Sybald on, definitely, but then he didn't really get much out of him because he didn't change the tactics. It was just really disappointing. And yes, we'll come on to talk about them. You can give a lot of credit to St Johnstone in terms of doing a number on Livingston, because St Johnstone were dominant, not quite throughout. Livingston probably edged the first 10-15 minutes, but after that, it was a very composed and controlled performance from St Johnstone. But the fact is, Livingston played right into their hands as well. And there were plenty of players. It's unusual for a cup final win for a team like St Johnstone. There were plenty of players in that St Johnstone team who you would hardly say, you know, had the game of their life or anything even close to it.
No, absolutely. I mean, Tom, let's sort of move on to St Johnston. I mean, what were the key elements to the victory? Who were the key players that were in there?
I mean, I think you could almost boil the comfort of the victory and the certainly the fact that St Johnston won down to two managerial decisions. One being the Rooney versus Bartley one, and the other being Conway starting ahead of Melamed, which was how they started in the semi-final. But Melamed's been excellent in recent weeks. He's linked up really nicely with Chris Kane. They've got a lot of energy. They really seem to complement each other. But if you go with Wotherspoon one side and Conway the other, you've got guile and intelligence versus on one wing, and you've got running and directness on the other. And I think that caused an awful lot of problems. It certainly seemed like even when Livingston had their best spell, which was definitely the first 10-15 minutes, it was rushed. It had to be rushed. They were always under pressure. It was like things were breaking for them, and they were getting chances in and around the box. Whereas when St Johnston were getting chances, it seemed like they had an awful lot more control. They seemed to be making an awful lot more space because they had width, and Livingston had played in their hands by not necessarily having a huge amount of width. That really, really helped them. I think Conway and Wotherspoon and Rooney and Callum Booth as well, who had a good game, got in behind an awful lot more. And with that natural width, they seemed to cause an awful lot more problems. I think St Johnston were definitely throwing themselves into things. They were fully committed. They were full of running. Their defence were really solid. But Callum Davidson made a fairly astute change based on what he saw from Livingston. And I think it meant that they were able to open play up. They were able to get players forward in support of attacks. Whenever St Johnston were going forward, there were always options. They seemed more in control. I mean, when they went 1-0, when they went 1-0 up, it very much seemed like the kind of cup final that you would see at any point in the last 3 years, when Celtic go 1-0 up and then are in full control of the game and are overloading. And it almost looked like that a little bit. I don't think that there was ever any point when Livingston looked like they had a sustained period of pressure. And I think you've got to give a lot of credit to St Johnston, because I think the wide players were excellent, but their midfield kept it calm, kept the ball moving. There maybe weren't a huge number of star performers who had like the game of their lives, but everyone was very professional.
Yeah, one of the sort of best players I would imagine was Chris Kane, Craig. I mean, he led the line superbly, didn't he?
Yeah. I mean, there were moments where he maybe let himself down on a couple of occasions. Yeah. That pass will live long in the memory when he was he had the chance to set. I think it was maybe Conway away down the right, and he went straight for a throw in. But on the whole, he did exactly what we talked about on in the preview show that we did on Patreon, which was a nightmare to deal with. He was pressing right across the front line. He led the line perfectly, and when he got on the ball with that odd exception, he linked up well with the guys in behind him, and that's what those two needed. That's what Wotherspoon and Conway and the midfield needed. They just needed a board to bounce the ball off. Do you know what I mean? Chris Kane, we know, is not going to score hundreds of goals, but what he does do is what we saw. Because I think the defenders from Livingston never had a moment's peace, and that meant that they couldn't build up from the back, which meant the balls into Robinson were of a worse quality. Everything's connected, and you can point at people. It's very easy to say he's not scored in about 8 games or something now, Chris Kane, but what he offers to the team is so important, and you see that, and it's big games where that really comes out, because in a big game when the scrutiny is really on every single player in the park, unlike a standard game, you really can sometimes see what these guys offer. And he could have been, probably but for the defenders, he could have been a shout for man of the match for St Johnston, because he was so much of a handful for Livingston.
Tom, where do we put this in sort of levels of achievements? I mean, we've got Callum Davidson, Craig, me and you were talking about this before, actually. It's like that we've got basically both these managers. One was going to win a trophy before they'd even completed 1 year in management. And for all these legends, and that now these are like living legends at St Johnstone now. I mean, guys like Witherspoon, they've won both trophies. It just seems like, I mean, all the stuff, the second most successful team of the last decade, it's really hard to believe, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's been merited. I mean, St Johnstone are a very well-run club. They are a club set up to, when the time comes for Callum Davidson to move on to whatever he moves on to next, they will be a very good platform for whoever comes next. They have succession plans. They have lots of things taken care of with whoever comes in next. You know, that they're a settled club regardless of who's in charge. They just happen to also be very good at picking who the coaches are. It's a team of absolute St Johnstone legends now. They've had a very strong level of consistency in the league for the last decade, where they've largely finished in the top six almost every single season. They've been in Europe regularly. They've equipped themselves well in Europe when they've got there, and they now have two trophies. Really impressed with Callum Davidson. I think he's another manager who you can see learning before your very eyes. There were lots of things that were not working earlier in the season. There were lots of things that he was trying that for one reason or another weren't clicking. And he's changed personnel. He's adapted the system. He's adapted the system by necessity. He's moved players around a bit. But they now look like a very well-balanced unit. They look like, I mean, if they could find more goals up front, I mean, this is demand for almost every team in the league, but if they could find more goals up front, they would be a very, very useful side week in, week out. But at the moment, there's a lot of balance to them, and there's an awful lot to enjoy. We are living through a golden era of St Johnstone Football Club.
And now we've got, I mean, I don't want to go back to him because, I mean, I feel like Sean Mooney's a guy that I've not stopped talking about, and I haven't stopped talking about for the last sort of 6 to 8 weeks since he moved into that position on numerous Patreons, talking about Player of the Month and MVPs, and then just on a weekly basis. But he seems like a really sound guy as well. So now we've got this, and now the whole of Twitter wants Sean Mooney on the bus. Now we've got a sound guy, we've got a top player, we've got a goal scorer. Are we getting him on the bus, Craig? Are we doing it?
As I said before, I was ridiculed for saying when he actually signed in the summer that if he had a good season, he would be in with it wouldn't take long to be considered for Scotland. And needless to say, I had the last laugh. it's one of these things. If Sean Rooney was a left back, nobody would even be talking about it, right? Because there are numerous really good left backs, but right back is a problem position, and the fact that he's playing well in a formation which is very similar to the one Scotland play, naturally he's going to be talked about. He's shown a lot of depth to his game. He's shown what he can do, and it's not just, you know, it's not just one game. It's not just, oh, he had a good performance in the cup final. Okay, maybe lots of people have just seen him for the first time in the cup final, but he's been playing like that for quite a few weeks. The header itself is the technique of that is fantastic. It's the power he gets on that. I think from the ball, it's slightly behind him, and he manages to pull it in. But what he offers is energy going up and down that flank, and I think that's fundamentally what O'Donnell's offered the Scotland team on that side. And so, if you're looking for a guy who can do something very similar, he is more suited to that formation than Liam Palmer is, for example. Palmer's a decent right back, but as a wing back, I don't think so. Is he going to be in the Scotland squad? Probably not, but if there was a couple of injuries at that position, would you be surprised? Also, no. It comes down to, you know, how do you pick the Scotland squad, and do you just occasionally bring in a wildcard, a guy who's been playing well for the last few weeks, or is it all about long-term form? Because if it's long-term form, you can say, you know, he's probably not even had 20 top flight games under his belt. He's been playing in the Championship and below before that. But I do think sometimes there's space for saying this guy's playing really well and can offer us something.
And the fact that he's playing in these cup semi-finals and finals, for him to be turning up in there, that's what gets me excited, that maybe he seems to be enjoying it and he seems to be liking the attention, as you said, that he mentioned after it. And that sort of sense, if that's the kind of confidence, then that sets him in good stead for maybe being thrown in randomly to sort of play for Scotland in big games. He might be unfortunate because we might have a lack of friendlies and we've still got loads of qualifiers and stuff, so maybe giving these guys a bash in those ones might put Clark off. But hopefully, but before we move on, I just want to talk about the sort of post-match, because the post-match was sort of better than the game. Sort of Marvin Bartley, I mean, he's a friend of the show, and I was really sad to see how much it hurt him. Obviously, he's been a big Hibs player, so he's someone that I've always been fond of. But I imagine he got, sorry, I feel like he got kind of thrown under the bus by his manager, and his manager maybe owes him an apology. But the sort of emotional side of Rooney and Callum Davidson, Tom, was nice.
I think it was. I think that, you know, you don't want to patronise these finals at all, but they obviously meant an awful lot to. And I think it's almost the opposite of patronising. Like it, I don't care what anyone says, it means less to Celtic fans. It does. Winning the League Cup means less to Celtic fans than any other team in the league, because when you don't win it very often, it matters an awful lot to you. Now, Callum Davidson has returned to his club, and he's won a trophy in his first season in charge. They've become living legends. I mean, he looked a little shell-shocked. He doesn't look like the sort of guy that gets easily rattled by things, and he didn't know what to say. He didn't know where to look. It was almost a shame that they followed up with questions about whether he can finish in the top six, because there was this moment of drama where it's like, don't press me too hard on this, because I'm feeling a little fragile and a little emotional. I thought both of them, but I'm equally, I know, Martin Dale got it wrong, but I thought he was very magnanimous in the defeat, and astute in what he said, and gave a fair assessment. You know, they are better than they have been in a long while. They probably will use this as motivation for the rest of the season and fuel going forward. Not to dwell on this one, and to look forward on what will undoubtedly be a good season for them. But for me, Callum Davidson, it was lovely to see his comments. I love seeing emotion from players. I love seeing how much it matters, especially in a weird final when you can't be with fans. I mean, I live just right around the corner from Hampden, and I walked right up to Hampden Park and wandered around, and it was great to be able to park on the street, but not so great for atmosphere. But yeah, it's lovely seeing the human side and how much it means to for fans to see what it means to managers, players, and for them to care every bit as much as you do, and for it to be written all over their face. I'm all for it.
I think the interview with Rooney, he kind of had the emotional side of it as well, where he obviously spoke about his with him, wasn't it? His mum and not being around to see it and stuff yet, and all of that kind of stuff. But it was a dynamite interview with him. I think you can sometimes tell these guys that have come from lower league football, they've not really been media trained and stuff, so they just say what they're thinking, and it's not, you know, sanitised in any way. And we've talked about this before, and I really enjoyed his interview. I thought it was slightly, obviously, that question, and he obviously got a bit emotional, and I felt like the interviewer was maybe being a bit over the top in every other interview. It was almost like, who are you doing this for? Who's it for? He was almost trying to make people upset, which I found a wee bit unusual after that. But yeah, it was good to see kind of they were very human interviews with all the St Johnstone players. I thought the one when Xander Clark kept popping in and out of the interview was quite funny as well, because it was almost like it was like, should I be here or should I not be here? And he kept kind of disappearing in and out of frame, and I was feeling sorry for the director, who was obviously having to decide whether to zoom in on the player that was being interviewed or not. But no, it was, you do see when it's smaller teams, you know, how how much it means compared to, you know, people that maybe win trophies all the time. And okay, some of these St Johnstone players have indeed won trophies before with them, but they still know the importance of it.
Right, I mean, I think that was pretty comprehensive, and I hope that, and yeah, I know what you mean, Tom. It does seem weird when these things happen. The problem with the League Cup compared to the Scottish Cup maybe is that the season's still going on. So when you're having, you want to have these magical moments of the discussion, and then I kind of don't want to hear anything about these boring questions about the fucking top six or whatever, the things that I hear every single week. And I mean, if it was me in Callum Davidson's shoes, I'd be away on one. I'd be like, oh, stuff in the top six, we're going for Europe now. I'd get extremely carried away.
We're delighted to hear that you've won the cup, but what are your thoughts on your team selection against Hamilton midweek?
I didn't care right then. I don't care. I just want to hear everyone being sort of delighted and happy. And I was glad to hear Davidson sort of saying, oh, we will be having a party. That's just our responsibility when this is all open, and I'll make sure that everyone was involved comes back for it, even if players have moved on or if coaches or managers are moved on. And I look forward to seeing sort of a bus going down the street at some point in Perth. And as even though I feel a bit for St Johnstone fans, because it's huge and they're not getting to experience it the way we all dream, but it won't be sad. Since it happened so rarely, I think for them, they'll still be able to have a huge party whenever it is that they decide to do it. And I wouldn't mind being around Perth on that day. But let's move on. Let's move on to the boring old Scottish Premiership after all that, and kick off with arguably the shock of the weekend, if you like, where Motherwell defeated Hibs by 2-0. And the question is, because it's Hibs, Craig Anderson, is it really a surprise?
I did expect them to win this game, just the form Motherwell had been on and the fact that it seemed like Hibs had maybe turned a wee corner, but also Hibs haven't still got that great a record at home. And you know that when a game matters, and it did matter in terms of they could have built up a lead because they knew Aberdeen were at Parkhead and probably going to lose. Spoiler, they did. They could have built up a bigger gap. And so you kind of feel with Jack Ross's teams consistently, when the pressure's on, they buckle. And that's what we saw again. They didn't play terribly to start with, but then Motherwell kind of cut them open with a bit of ease. And ultimately, I think the result was probably deserved.
Yeah, I mean, when I was watching it, I was a bit worried for the reason as Hibs without Ryan Porteous in there, it's like obviously Hanlon and McGregor aren't the most mobile, and I think we know that with Motherwell, I know it hasn't always worked out for them, but when they have that front three, they are extremely mobile, they're clever, they're intelligent, they like playing against, I mean, Cole I talk about quite regularly, and obviously Tory Watts is fit and a guy who loves running the channels and will definitely pull people out of position, and with Roberts coming in, sort of the kiss of death, Joel, even though it's worked out well for someone like Joel, I mean, ever since Joel sort of criticised Roberts, he's sort of had a decent game through the week where he was quite direct and he was getting crosses in against St Mirren, and now he's got a goal and assist for Motherwell. But I do think that front three of Motherwell, well, certainly Cole and Watt anyway when they play, I know sometimes it's Lang, but they do, when they're on song, they're arguably, I actually think they're probably, when they're on song, the most dangerous sort of forward line outside of the old firm. I don't know if you'd agree with that, Tom.
Roberts, Cole and Watt do sound like a very solid legal team. They complement each other. They all do something slightly different. And I think the frustration with Motherwell is, so many times I've seen them this season and they have been awful. Like, they've been absolutely woeful. The game against St Johnstone was the single worst performance I've seen from any team this season, where they didn't turn up and they were batted aside. What's so frustrating with... So all the other teams around them scrapping for points at the moment down at the bottom are good for the odd point here or there. They struggle to score goals, but, you know, they're good for the odd point. They're good for the odd surprise result. And that's what's keeping it interesting. Motherwell would go can go like 4 weeks without winning and then beat somebody, you know, and then look like a team challenging for third. That's what's so frustrating about them. Like when they're good, they make it look really, really simple. And I think that was exactly what we saw in that game against Hibs. The front three link up really well. They don't need to have an awful lot of possession because four quick passes, there's space in behind and they're in. And Tony Watt is very much a player who plays in fits and bursts, but when he's on form, he brings everyone with him. You know, he links up play so nicely. He makes things happen around about him, and that's what's happening. But they're so reliant on Tony Watt bursting into life when he's not on form. Like I wouldn't be surprised at all if Motherwell went on a three-match winning run now, or didn't win again until, you know, the end of the season. They're just having that kind of season.
They're just, I said that Hibs, Jack Ross, I mean, I'm not saying we should have changed the shape, because I think that's a bit, and that's easy for me to say now. But I was worried with the sort of us going a back three against that Motherwell. It's like three proper strikers and guys that are going to want to play on the last. And it really did turn out that way. They got ran ragged. It's a sort of man for man. And it was a man for man without Gogic as well in that midfield. He really, sort of Jack Ross really went for it. I know he's been criticised for being sort of negative at points in this, but he certainly wasn't in this. And it really backfired against him. I think that looking back with the way that Tony Watt drops off the front, and how McGregor and Hanlon had a woeful game. McGinn had possibly his worst game in a Hibs shirt. And I don't just mean that in a defensive sense. I mean, he was giving the ball away very, very regularly when Hibs did have the ball. And I think with Gogic in there, maybe being able to pick up people, like, so when one of these strikers was dropping off, he could have maybe solved that. And then that maybe meant that the back three could have stayed a back three and they wouldn't have got other. But it didn't work out that way, and he did. And the changes didn't happen till the game was already 2-0, and it was probably beyond Hibs then. But yeah, it was just a really poor performance from Hibs in all angles. They never really seemed to worry Motherwell many points in them, maybe till later on. I mean, Jackson Irvin with the sort of really nice through ball for Deutsch, which he hit the goalie with, of course, and then sort of Deutsch had that other big chance later on. But outside of that, there really wasn't anything else, and they really nullified the threat of Martin Boyle, who's obviously been in great form this season. But do you see, Craig, do you see the difference with Motherwell having a decent goalie in there?
I mean, yeah. I mean, fair enough, Kelly has been playing the games where they got pumped the last couple of weeks as well. But yeah, he's miles better than anything they've had, you know, the rest of the season, really, with the exception, I think, Carson played a couple of games before he got injured again. But any of the others that they brought in, Kelly is a goalkeeper I've always liked from when he was at Livingston as well. Not, you know, he did still make the odd mistake and things like that, but he's very reliable. He's still quite young. He's still got a good chance. You know, at his age, I think he's 25. There's some goalkeepers have barely played a game. And it can be a position where you blow him a bit later, and he's getting a lot of experience under his belt. The thing that struck me from Motherwell is they've just started to get a bit of shape back, because I think, you know, they do have a lot of players out, and that's fair enough, but they do also still have the team that's out there. It's not like you look at that and go, oh, that's a bunch of folk I've never heard of or anything. They're still mainly, with the exception of Maglio or however you pronounce it, they are mostly established players at this level. But him, the pairing of him and Lamy at the back, which had the potential, I think, to be a car crash, they actually both played well for much of the game. And then it is that front three. And having Kelly behind them can't do, you know, it must help, because you're not, like, I think, having watched my team having absolute clown car goalkeepers for the last two seasons, it doesn't put any faith in the defence. You notice the difference in defenders when they know a guy behind them is actually going to, you know, come and get the ball, or he's going to make the saves or things like that. So I think it's underestimating sometimes how important it is. You'll never win anything. You'll never do well if you don't have a good goalkeeper.
And yeah, just before we move on, just that Tony Watt pass, pass of the weekend, for Roberts to get her on goal. It was absolutely delicious, really. I could, if it wasn't Hibs, I would have been watching it all day, non-stop. And then Defani Cole's back in the goals, and he really looks like he's having a, he's sort of quietly having a really good season. I spoke about him numerous times. As I say, I'm on record for saying he's a player that I really, really rate and I really, really like. And I thought he caused Hibs problems all day because I said he's one of the few strikers in this league that I think he can do it all. He can drop short, he's good with his back to goal, he can go beyond. And I think Hanlon really, really struggled to decide what he wanted to do with them. But so it's a huge moment for Hibs now. They need to go back and try and make sure it doesn't come any slide, because it's a really key period of the season. And if we can get, obviously Hibs still have a game in hand on Aberdeen to open up that 7-point gap before we go into the top six. But there's some tough games coming up. Obviously got to go to Pittodrie as well. So again, there's a lot of excitement outside of that Rangers at the top of the league. The rest of the league still in a really, really exciting place. But no one would have been more excited than Craig Anderson when Kilmarnock scored a goal. Craig, talk me through it.
Yeah, I was very excited. If I talk you through it, I was watching the stream. We had a corner. I looked at my phone and I saw a WhatsApp message from you, Tony, saying, go for Killy. So I wasn't annoyed, though, because it's been that long since we've scored that I wouldn't have minded if you'd told me, 60 minutes before it happened, let alone 60 seconds, so or not even that. But then, and I mean, I could revel in the full glory of it, and it was definitely no more than we deserved from the game. I think there's been a marked improvement in performance since Tommy Wright took over, particularly in terms of the shape of the back, and also how direct we are in terms of attacking the game. We now look like we're, pressing teams, driving at teams, doing all the things that you should be doing. We're not that bad a team in spite of where we are in the league. And if you're struggling for confidence and you just have to take up a shape, be solid and do all the simple things and just play simple football. And that's more or less what we did. And we could have won that game, but the point was the very least we deserved. And I was more happy after the game than I was before it, even though obviously it's an opportunity to win a game at home that was missed.
It was exciting to see for Kilmarnock, just looking at the squad, it looks like you're pretty much getting back to full strength. I know Burke is on the bench. I know obviously Burke will play, but I see Kilty came back in and Power came back in. Craig, who've not really been around recent games, how big an impact did they have?
Kilty was probably quite quiet. He's a good player, and I think this is going to always be the problem with Greg Kilty. His best position is as a number 10, but he's probably not quite good enough as a number 10 to always be, to build the team around him at this level. He's good. And so then he gets shifted out to the left, but then he doesn't play well out in the left, and then it's like, I think a little bit more responsibility has to come on to him to say, okay, I need to adapt my game and learn to play on the left, because I think if he can be on the left, he can offer something. But I think playing him as a number 10 sometimes will work, but I have doubts about him long term in that position if he doesn't just add a wee bit something else to his game. Alan Power was excellent coming back into the middle of the park. He'd been suspended for a couple of games. And I'd been saying for a while he needed a spell out of the team, because I think he's been fairly poor most of this season. But that access of him and Dicker again was excellent. And I think that it's also a conscious decision Wright's made, because you've got Tish Bola and Malumbu sitting on the bench, who are also two very good players. But rather than trying to shoehorn, an extra midfield player into the team, he's went, let's play a back four with full back, a left-footed centre-half and a right-footed centre-half. Let's have a left-back and a right-back. And let's have a midfield four where you've got a left-footed player on the left and a right-footed player on the right. These simple things that he's obviously favoured that over trying to get the best players on the park. there are cases where that didn't work. I mean, Mitch Pinnock is, as much as I can say for him, is that he's left-footed. He was awful in this game. There's very little that can be said. He's just. He looks like if you shoved like me or you out on the park sometimes. In theory, he looks. I always get the feeling that he's got a good left foot, but then he doesn't actually ever cross. He doesn't ever actually deliver good crosses or anything of the sort. I think a player we need to cut our losses on. play anybody that's anybody. Play Callum Waterhouse. I think Danny Rogers is left footed. Put him on the left wing. Like just anything.
The worst praise I've ever heard someone get is he has a strong foot, everyone has. Craig, I wanted to ask you, because obviously I only saw the highlights for this. Dundee United, I saw they'd made a couple of changes for the Rangers games, which kind of annoyed me because I enjoyed their sort of opening sort of the style that they went for against Rangers, and I wanted to ask you, were they doing the same high pressing? Like, how were they set up when sort of Kilmarnock had the ball? Because I see that they had, I mean, a pair was put on the bench and he was sort of subbed on and subbed off again. And then Clark was sort of on the bench. I was really disappointed because I thought the blend that they had against Rangers worked really well.
Yeah, I mean, I have to admit, like, when it gets to this point in the season and we've got something riding on it, I probably pay less and less attention to the opponents, but they did press quite high up the park, and there was a couple of times of them winning the ball. Obviously, a goal, in fact, came from that when Medley wanted too long on it and instead of getting rid and got robbed, and they scored from that. But they weren't very good. I've never really been impressed by them much this season, to be honest, particularly in the midfield. They just had nothing there. They completely ceded the midfield to Kelly, which, when you've got a midfield as strong as we do, it's you feel like you need to try something else. They were solid. They're a solid team. Like, their defence played pretty well until they brought Mark Connolly on. Fullbacks got up and down. Like, they were functional. But yeah, they're just not. And I'm sure people say that about us as well. And I would say about us that they're not a team that I enjoy watching. But there's just, I really, McNulty just doesn't do enough for me at all. I just think he had a purple patch at that first spell at Hibs, and I've seen nothing since then to convince me that he should be keeping someone like Clark out of the team.
It's just so, well, I'm sorry, Tom, because the reason I was asking is because I remember you said last week Dundee United are the team you least enjoy watching. I think it was a stronger word than that.
Throughout this season, I have hated watching Dundee United. Whenever I've had to watch Dundee United, like, I just don't. I find them a torturous watch. I find them like they set out to claim a point and they claim a bunch of points. But when we were last chatting about them and the game against Rangers, I thought, oh, right, they're onto something here, because they caused Rangers more bother. Yes, they ultimately got horsed, but you know, they went and had a go, and it was not, you know, they were unlucky to get as badly beaten as they were. But they stood toe to toe with Rangers for the first 20 minutes. They pressed high. They caused problems at the back. They won possession back high up the park, and they looked like they had settled on at least some kind of strategy to make use of the fact that their best players are forwards. That they certainly at least have one international quality striker on the pitch. And it seemed to be a corner that was turned there. This very much looked like back to the plan that they'd had before. I've found really difficult to get an awful lot of positives. I mean, they get their goal, but it's from a mistake, and they were quite lucky to get to come away with a point. I was pretty impressed with Kelly from what I saw. Every time I've seen Kilmarnock under Tommy Wright, they may not dramatically improve in performance, but they look like everybody knows what they're doing a little bit more. Everybody knows what shape they're... Everybody knows what they're trying to get out of it. And I think Lafferty, who had a pretty good game, seems to... The sort of confidence that he brings, the sort of, like, there's there's a level of confidence you get from being someone like, I'm being quite diplomatic about this, from being someone like Cal Lafferty, who's travelled the world and played in lots of different places and doesn't seem to give a shit whether what people think about him. And fairly early on, he hits the bar. And from that, from like a ridiculous angle, that kind of unpredictability has been sorely missing. But it feels like his unpredictability, his ability to pull something out of nowhere was rubbing off. It's like the fact that he was going to try unpredictable things gave other players a little bit more permission to play. And I think there was a lot. I thought Dicker and Power had a complete dominance of the midfield. No one on the pitch had more of the ball than they did, and they were playing as well. You know, their touches were good. There was a bit of interplay between more than one Kilmarnock player, which has not necessarily been the case. And they were also able to the worry, I think, for Killy, as an outsider anyway, has been, and I've said it a couple of times, has been you're reliant on either Burke turning it on, which he inevitably does, but you know can't do it absolutely every single week, or Kabamba getting luckier, looking like the player he was a year ago, which doesn't look like it's happening either. So you were kind of reliant on two players turning on. You know, they were able to come off the bench, and the players that were on the park from the start looked like they had a bit of an X factor to them. So I think there was an awful lot more positives, and ultimately Killy could have won it. The goal disallowed at the end, that the sort of foul on the goalkeeper that I'm overall quite glad are given as fouls on the goalkeeper, but probably wasn't.
Just to go quickly back to Dundee United, just to something you said earlier, Craig, about McNulty. I mean, I've spoke about not loving McNulty as well on here, and I've also had two, and I think this, I've seen it again. I know he came off the bench and he scored against Rangers, but they looked much stronger without him in the team, and the balance of the front three seems much stronger. As in, when against Rangers, you've got a pair who is able to sort of stretch them and pull wide. He's got pace, he's got legs. You've got the intelligence of Shankland, and obviously the ability to play on the shoulder and sort of his movement to get goals, which has always been excellent. And then Nicky Clark, who has shocked me really on his ability to sort of play that sort of more number 10 role. And it all makes sense and it worked. And then McNulty, just all he wants to do is sort of play on the shoulder. His game's all about movement, and it sort of just steals away sort of that the strategy that you were talking about, Tom, that sort of made sort of sense in an attacking format. And don't do it, and I can't get this nagging feeling out of my head, and I've said it before, that the fact he's not getting he wasn't able to take the pay cut because of how he was signed, and he's the only player that's sort of on full wages at the moment. I get this horrible feeling that that's a big reason why it's sort of forced in that he plays. But I could be wrong. And finally, Craig, Seagrass made a good save and arguably, as Tom said, got away with one at the end. How was his performance in general?
He was good, but something I hadn't seen much from him before. In the first 15, 20 minutes, I think it was about four different crosses that he came out and completely missed. And it's not something I've noticed before. And even the goal comes from a set piece where you could argue he could have came for that ball. I think it was Kabamba that won the header. I'm not sure. It was kind of flicked by someone into the path of Medley. It was in the 6-yard box. So I would have questions there, but he made a number of saves. I mean, that was one thing that was kind of more positive from Kelly, was the number of shots we actually took in the game. Been a big problem all season, but immediately, as Tom said, having Lafferty, he had shots himself, but like some of the other players were, you know, taking pot shots from distance and things. Seagrass had to make a couple of great saves. A free kick from Lafferty, you would expect him to save, but the follow-up from Pinnock, he does well to get to. Maybe not like a big, impressive, world-class save in there or anything, but he showed that side to his game. But crossing, it was interesting. If you're talking about a guy who I really rate very highly, it's maybe a big flaw to his game.
Well, talking of goalkeepers, in Paisley, we saw some of the best sort of goalkeeping saves of the weekend, I would argue, with Ross Laidlaw pulling off, honestly, what I think might be one of the, up there, definitely one of the top five saves of the season I saw, and then Alwick getting the save, sort of reaction save underneath the bar when he managed to push it under the bar, but ultimately St Mirren getting the win that all but sort of gets their top six status confirmed. And Tom, how big an achievement is that?
It is big. It's big. I mean, I think huge credit has to go to Jim Goodwin. I think last season they sort of stopped the rot. They made themselves difficult to beat, but not a huge amount beyond that. They were hard to beat. But for a unfortunate Hearts team, they may well have gone down. This season, they've come on leaps and bounds. He fixed the defence, now he's fixed the midfield, and he's found something that works up front. They're not bad to watch either. You know, they play, and there are some very good players in that team. There's a lot of good youth coming through there that are getting games regularly. You know, it won't be too far before there's another one off the production line that is playing at a higher level. But no, they're decent to watch. It's a good achievement. There are teams below them that have a higher wage budgets, and it's a step towards the seemingly impossible ambitions of their paymasters, which seem to be, you know, we laughed at. Yes, it seems to be like, yo, you're not playing Champions League football. What do you mean? But you know that there's rarely been a week this season where you thought St Mirren have had an absolute stinker. They could probably cast envious eyes over at St Johnstone winning the League Cup, given St Mirren put Rangers out and looked like they had a good chance of getting to the latter stages there. But there's a lot to enjoy about them. And I think speaking about the two saves, like two exceptional saves, a Laidlaw from McCarthy, but the Omelet one from White was just, in general, an all-round fun bit of play. Like White should really score, but it's a great stop, like, you know, pushing it onto the bar and then down and away. But it comes out, there's arguably two good penalty shouts. Spittle gets fouled on the edge of the box, but falls to Kelly and he lashes it off the bar. That's great fun.
Yeah, there's sort of those moments where there's nothing to do with tactics. It's nothing to do with shape. It's pure reactionary football as it sort of pinballs around, and that's so we're all there to see it. If you're in the ground, the fans going crazy, and these are the things that you miss, because I do love it, like that, the absolute heart stopping moments in the box. I wanted to, obviously, going back to something, and I've spoke before, sort of the real thing that impresses me about Goodwin is he had a really tough pre-season last season, but he didn't get any of the sort of the players that he wanted until really, really late. It seemed a bit haphazard, and he had to just deal with it, and he managed to get a squad together that would just about keep them in the league. And then this season, like everyone, he's had to deal with the coronavirus, so he didn't get a proper pre-season. So he's not that, in his sort of short managerial career, he's never really had a sort of pre-season where he's been ready. And for him to have made such a stark improvement to the team, and sort of getting the recruitment so right. And I know that at St Mirren, when I watched their game during the week, I think that they do seem to have quite a lot of thought off the field and how they do that. It's certainly not just Jim Goodwin that does that. They seem to be relatively, through the interview that I watched anyway, which was on St Mirren TV. So, I mean, obviously, it's always going to come across positive in the old propaganda, but it certainly come across like they did have the right idea in their recruitment, and it was a much more sort of channeled, joined up thinking from everyone at the club. Someone I do like, so we spoke at length, Doyle Hayes, Erehorn, McGrath, and we could always do that, but Connolly, I'm getting the feeling that we could get a sort of, using a Hibs analogy maybe, Craig, maybe we could end up getting like a sort of Ivan Sproul or Martin Boyle type moment from Connolly, where it's sort of, he's got all these attributes and it'll sort of click and he'll start being such a really dangerous player.
Yeah, they're two really good comparisons because he's a guy that he's got one key attribute, which, well, two key attributes, which are pace and directness, and he's maybe not made anything of them so much. Like, but you know that when you have those two things, they are quite rare, especially in Scottish football. If you can just get small incremental improvements in all the other parts of his game, then you have a real kind of nightmare opposition, a nightmare opponent on your hands. And so I can imagine that kind of rawness is what they'll be looking at. How can we kind of get the best out of the abilities that he has as a player? And yeah, he's a player. I always think that you can get away with a lot if you have pace, and you can see that from him, that he's dangerous. It doesn't matter how well he's playing. The other team always has to think about him.
Yeah, because he's starting to, I noticed against Celtic, he was in on goal. Obviously against Hibs, he set up the sort of, turned out to be consolation goal over the top. And in this game, I saw that he had another one-on-one, and that seems to be happening every time I watch now, that Connolly's getting in on goal. And as maybe if he improves in front of goal and that composure, you are talking about a hugely dangerous player. And I like it. I mean, Goodwin going to the League of Ireland to pick up these players. And sort of like, I mean, Ivan Sproul, sort of like the really obvious sort of one. I mean, guy, I've not seen Connolly just run the ball out the pitch and run up the ground like I used to see Ivan Sproul do it in his early days. But I'm excited about him. Last thing before we quickly move on to County, but why does Irwin have to play, Tom? A loaded question, but there you go.
It's a good question.
He seems to come in quite regularly, doesn't he? They have got other options, and I know Abika's been far from. I know I'm sorry, answering one question now, apologies. I know Abika's. Sorry, his form's been up and down, but he was coming into a bit of form recently. I mean, he set up the goal for McPherson, not so back, and sort of with McAllister and McGrath and Connolly there. Just Abika suits it better, and Irwin's he's been shite for years, hasn't he?
He's not really recaptured anything like the form that meant that Leeds wanted to take him south. And, you know, we're now talking 6 or 7 years. I don't think by any stretch he's a terrible player. It's just, there's no... Abika works. He's the player that they've got. There are definitely better footballers that they've got. There are definitely better footballers. They're definitely better strikers who have greater football ability than Abika. But he makes that system work. And he brings in the players round about him. And it's not like St Mirren are playing so many games with such regularity that they've got to rotate constantly. We went back to the transfer policy, and they've shopped very, very well in the League of Ireland and in League Two, basically bringing in, like, identifying what they need and going out and getting them. Up front seems to be the one area that they haven't necessarily done that they got Abika last season. Obviously, if a player like Eamon Brophy comes up, then you want to have him, but there doesn't seem to have been the same amount of thought over how you're going to use him. And similarly with Lee Irwin, like, he has talent in it, not too distant past, has shown that he has ability. But where that fits in the team, I don't know. And he's only got a couple of goals this season, and isn't bringing in other players in the same way. I mean, maybe it's just, you want to bend it up the opposition by hoping that he scores against his old team, but it doesn't seem like a winning strategy.
Obviously, Ross County, really briefly, I mean, they'll be disappointed to not follow up that result against Celtic, even with a point, and I'm sure they feel hard done. Well, John Hughes certainly feels hard done by for the penalty, and if you're wondering why we've not went over maybe some of these talking points from maybe Graham Alexander earlier on, and sort of maybe Jim Goodwin from here, is that we're going over to do the Patreon right after this with our new slot on a Monday, which is called He Said, She Said, which is now going to be sort of pulling the bones out of sort of managerial and punditry quotes. So we're not going to go into too much detail about it. You'll have to send us money to hear about that. But we do have Ross County. I mean, I enjoyed the Iacovitti effort. Jakovic is a funny player. I mean, he's not really been playing under Hughes as much, as they seem to have sort of been going more for a back four when obviously Kettlewell was big in his back three. But Craig, did you enjoy his shot? It was a great save. I didn't know he had it in him.
It's always funny when you get a player who just suddenly does something that you don't expect them to do. I would remember, and maybe that was just me, like Kevin McGowan, who's a centre-half for Kelly for years, all of a sudden started taking like curling free kicks. And you're just like, when did you gain that ability? But he's a funny player, Jakovic, in the sense that he's well thought of. I think he's got Scotland youth caps and stuff like that. And you're right, he's been out of the team, but I think he's someone that has a future at this level. I mean, it may be that he has to drop down and go back up and stuff like that, but I think he's someone that we'll probably see more of in the Premiership. But I think from Ross County in general, like, they will be disappointed. How often does it happen that you pick up a result like they did last week and you always seem to go on and lose your next game? And I mean, a lot of it's because you're, you know, not a very good team fundamentally, so you are going to lose games like that, and it's the same for a lot of teams in the league. But they had an opportunity to open up a bit of a gap with Hamilton not playing and Kelly obviously not winning. They could have gone, I think they could have gone 3 points, sorry, 4 points clear if they'd won this game of the playoff place. With a game against Kelly next week, they will be looking to that. That's kind of pivotal in both teams' season. If County win that and go four clear of Kelly, it's a big ask to pull them back in. But if they lose, they obviously get leapfrogged. So I think every game's massive now. But I mean, and the two teams have still to play each other again after the split. But it immediately becomes a massive game up in Dingwall.
I was, it was interesting. Obviously, we spoke about the game after Celtic, and I was saying I had selection worries for Ross County, and I actually thought they could play a better team than what they were putting out. But again, they did sort of beat Celtic. But I think with the changes that sort of John Hughes made in this game, I mean, he's making three. Was it not like three subs at half-time? That's certainly what it looked like to me. Shaw, Donaldson and Jakovic all coming on. It looked like he changed the shape. He did go to a back three at that point. So he's still sort of trying to get to grips with sort of the lineup he's going to have. So it'll be really interesting. I still don't be interested to see where John Hughes settles. I mean, I'm really surprised that Payton's found himself at the team. And obviously he came on and had a huge impact against Celtic with the cross for the goal. And Jakovic, to go back to him, I'm surprised there's no seeing more of him. I thought he'd be a John. Jakovic is quite good with the ball at his feet. He likes a raking pass to the wide players. So I would think that John Hughes loves a preach about playing football the right way and all that jazz. So I would be shocked if Jakovic didn't get a bit more of a run at some point. But I think we'll see sort of a completely different lineup for Ross County in the future. But quickly, we're going to move on because this is all taking too long and we're meant to be doing other things. So let's go to Aberdeen at Parkhead, Tom. Sort of 1-0 defeat from a sort of deflected effort. Just, I know we want to talk about Aberdeen, but it's just interesting. How did you find Celtic? Was there anything you noticed under Kennedy that was any sort of different?
I think the most startling thing was Celtic under Kennedy were very similar to Celtic under Lennon. I was kind of expecting that as soon as it was halfway through, as soon as it was announced last week that Lennon was leaving, I was like, I did think that typical, you know, could you not have just waited a couple more days so that we could have had our shot at this, like, dysfunctional unit? And what will inevitably happen is, you know, they'll buckle down, they'll realise that they've had it easy. Kennedy will go in, shake things up, and they'll absolutely, like, roast us. And it didn't really happen. There wasn't a huge amount different tactically. They were still pretty prone at set pieces. I think the I mean, you never feel particularly positive about when you've got to go to Parkhead, but the one comfort you can get is when you hear Patrick Klamala starts. That's about as good as you're going to get. But no, I think the most startling thing was there wasn't a huge reaction. There wasn't an obvious change in shape. The players, you know, the best player on the park was Christopher Eyer, who's been the best player on the park all season. So I'm very difficult to read a huge amount into it. I think, you know, Jonjo Kenny again was lively, but Celtic could and probably should have won that game, this game 2-0, and I don't think there'd been a huge amount to read into it. They could, and given the chances, could easily have been 1-1, and there wouldn't have been a huge amount to read into it. Very difficult to say anything from a Celtic point of view in what this means. I mean, we're assuming Kennedy is not going to get the gig long term. He's kind of just to damage limitation and to give some hope that they can sell some season tickets between now and the end of the season, you would assume. If that's the case, they might need to do a bit more than this.
Yeah, because he's been part of it. Let's be honest. You can't just absolve him of all blame as easy as it is, because people enjoy bashing Neil Lennon for a whole range of reasons. But recently Lennon has been going back to sort of having the three in behind Edward, which has had mixed success, and obviously Turnbull's been, so this went back to the sort of diamond, and he brought Klamala in. Did Klamala sort of stretch the Aberdeen defence at all as a sort of front two, like something like a real striker up there beside Edward?
He makes the right runs. He just doesn't get on the end of things. Like, if he was a couple of inches taller, maybe, or had slightly longer legs, he would get... Because you can see what he's trying to do. Like, he'll peel off a defender and run to the back post, but then miss the cross. So there is some instinct there. But not hugely. I mean, the players that you'd expect, Edward caused problems. Like, yes, his goal was deflected, but he'd made a bunch of space for himself to get the chance in. Ryan Christie, who always seems to have a pretty good game against us, had a pretty good game against us. But I haven't seen anything in Klamala that suggests that he is a better option than, say, Lee Griffiths, who's on the bench, or even, you know, Elianusi, and play him and change the formation slightly.
And last thing, may as well touch on Aberdeen. How were Aberdeen? They looked like they started pretty well. They created some openings. Canberry was up front with McGinn in behind. Is that right? And it was sort of like a 3-5-1-1 that Aberdeen went with, Tom.
Yeah, it definitely helped. I mean, having Niall McGinn on the pitch helps, because you've got set piece deliveries, and the times that they troubled Celtic were from set pieces. I mean, Ash Taylor had two very quickly in succession, one that he probably should have done better and Bain saved, one that came off the top of the bar, and he had one in the second half as well. So it was the set piece deliveries that were causing problems. Up until the goal, they were in it. And when Callum Hendry came on, they were a lot more competitive, were able to go a little bit more directly, and the Celtic defence isn't particularly experienced or particularly good, so there were a few more questions asked. I think overall, probably yes, it was another defeat. Yes, it was another game without scoring, but overall it probably was a marginally better performance than most of the last 10 matches. There was a bit more to it. Not that much more to it, but a bit.
Lastly, very last thing, I promise. should we be worried about... I mean, you watch it more than me, Aberdeen, and obviously they have been in poor form and they've been lacking goals. Should we be worried about McCrory and Ferguson? I just don't... Nobody raves about them anymore, and we were all sort of raving about them earlier in the season, and they were superb. Ferguson with the goals, McCrory with his drive. He looked like he was going to be the sort of signing of the season, but it's all went sort of quiet on that front. Do you expect that to change again?
I wouldn't be massively worried about them. I mean, I think at the moment the preferred three seems to be McCrory, Ferguson and Campbell, which is a terrifyingly young three. I think if as Dylan McGee gets back up to speed, he may well be in there as well. And in theory, at least, McGee, Ferguson, McCrory complement each other quite nicely as a three. I think Ferguson has arguably been the best player in a fairly bad bunch in the last couple of months. He, even in the games when Aberdeen were absolutely atrocious, like the defeat to Livingston, the 2-0 defeat to Livingston, he was the only player who looked like he was trying to haul them back into things. So I think he's actually done okay. I think for McCrory, it's almost been he started very well and had a point to prove. I think he needs to sort of find where he sits in the team. Is he going to be, is he a box-to-box midfielder? Is he a sitting midfielder? Does he want to play, but which of the three does he want to be? He's got the option for to be any of those players in his career. And I think he's sort of caught between all three options sometimes. He was very good in the Killie game, to be fair. But I think, is it a concern? A little bit. How far down the list of concerns Aberdeen have at the moment? Quite far down, which is probably damning.
No, I agree with the McGeoch thing. I think we've not seen, obviously, the best of McGeoch there. But I think if they continue with this formation with sort of more like a 3-5-2, I think McGeoch will he will be very well complemented with McCrory and Ferguson in there. And I'd be quite excited to see that. As a sort of McGeoch fanboy from his time at Hibs. We're going to have to go there because that's went way over. So thank you very much for listening. Please join us at the Patreon. I know I was asking yous for money in quite a brass-necked way, but we do really appreciate it and we would really like it. So come and join us over there and enjoy it. And we're going to do, as I said, this new He Said, She Said. And we're going to pick the bones out of three interviews, which is Gordon Strachan and he's slagging off of Edward and Sorrow having a giggle. We're going to be talking about Graham Alexander, which was sort of a highlight of the week for me, and also another one that's just slipped off my head, even though I have the details of it. Jim Goodwin and diving and John Hughes' argument. So come over and join us. Craig Anderson, say goodbye.
Cheerio.
Tom, say goodbye.
Cheers.
Cheers. Thank you, everyone.
Podcast Network.